Welcome to today's businessradio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, the host of the program that airs both on air as well as online and on demand. We have developed a business reference library of interviews with experienced business advisors to help you build enterprise value, improve profitability, control expenses, and formulate a plan for your eventual exit strategy. In other words, we help you maximize the value of your business. Today's guest is Michael Lasky, who is a registered patent and trademark attorney and an internationally recognized speaker on the topic of building stronger and more valuable companies, including exit strategies for privately held businesses. He is the founder of Altera Law Group, an intellectual property law firm in Minneapolis and Atlanta. He is also a graduate of the University of Minnesota and Syracuse Universities and a published author. Welcome back. We are calling this the WOW Show, Who Owns What and Why It Matters. In the first podcast, we talked about how you should be aware of trademarks, branding, and copyrights. And in the second part of this two-part program, on getting ownership of key assets, which can make your company more valuable and avoid expensive repair work, we're going to focus on patents as a key asset for many companies and how to get valuable, transferable rights that will be important in your succession planning and in your exit strategy. Michael, when we're talking about patents, I think about products. I'm a service company. I provide a service. I help people plan and prepare for the eventual sale of their company. And what I do is mostly talk and planning and sitting down with advisors and putting together a plan. I shouldn't have to worry about patents, should I? Or patent infringements?
Well, you may not be able to get a patent because so far talking is totally unpatentable. But methods of doing things are patentable, and certainly software is patentable. And you may be employing a method of somebody else in your operation of your business, which is covered by a patent, and you have no idea. So you can be subject to patent infringement even if you don't have any technology of your own. So this subject technically will cover every company. Obviously, it's more prominent for those companies who create things, create methods, create software, modify things, the typical meaning of patents, but it stretches far beyond that, and everybody is potentially under the purview of the patent system.
Somehow I knew you were going to say that, but I need you to give me an example of a service company that could have some kind of trouble or could be caught up in patent infringement or should have some concerns. Why should I worry about patents?
Okay, well, the most obvious area is if you are doing, you have software or you've developed software that runs your business, or you've taken off-the-shelf software and modified it to make it do what you want it to do, it may be covered by a patent. So that's one area. The other area is a much more slippery area, and it's been to the Supreme Court just recently, involving business methods. Now, business methods are a whole new area of patents, and the Supreme Court, which was supposed to resolve this issue, resolved it in the following way. We don't know exactly whether business methods are patentable, but we'll look at each one of them. So the problem right now is that there are business methods that are probably patentable and could be enforced, and they could cover something that you're doing. Not the routine stuff, but something unusual, creative, and so forth. We don't have a clear answer on this, but it could happen. But certainly in the area of software, you could easily fall into patent infringement.
So your methodology or your process or your software or your customer relationship management systems, some of the things that make you special or different from other companies could come under this.
It could, but I should also say, if you buy a product which infringes a patent, you're an infringer by buying it.
There you go, giving me another headache, Michael. I don't know.
Now, typically, the buyers are not sued for patent infringement. The makers are. But sometimes you can't get at the maker because they're in China. So if you are a large importer of product, I mean, this is very common. A company buys something, marks it up, puts their name on it, and sells it further. That's common ground for patent infringement because it's the product. And it doesn't matter who made it. It matters who's moving it through the system. So the importer, the reseller, and, of course, the retailer are all subject to patent infringement.
Okay, I think we better back up and get to basics.
Okay.
What were patents meant to cover?
Okay. The most common areas are new ideas or new ways to use an old idea. New ideas, machines, things that don't move, which are not machines, chemical formulas, ways to use things that exist. I'll give you an example of that. For example, aspirin has, obviously its primary use is to prevent headaches or to dissipate headaches.
I think I need one right now.
Right? But it has a secondary use, which is in reducing the likelihood of blood clot. Now, had somebody discovered and patented that secondary use for an existing product, it would be patentable even though the product existed before. So you can find a new use for an old idea, and it's repatentable, if you will.
That sounds a bit dangerous.
Well, it's the whole point is to encourage companies to come up with new ideas, even if it's built on existing building blocks that have been around for a while. You can't repatent an old idea, but a new use of an idea can be patented.
So what if I keep all of my new ideas as trade secrets? Do I need a patent?
Okay, that's a very common answer. Basically, it works like this. When you have an idea and you use it, even in secret, let's say we have a method for making some secret sauce and we use it in our back office and nobody ever sees how we've done it and we sell the product that is a result of our secret method. 1 year after we started to sell that secret method product, the secret method is no longer patentable to us forever. In other words, we waited too long. In the patent system, you have time limits. If you don't make the time limits, you have given up your right forever. However, this is the problem. Suppose you've been doing the secret sauce method in your back room and you chose to keep it as a trade secret, which, by the way, is very hard to do because employees come and go and things leak. But you've waited over a year. You've lost your patent rights forever. But I, having never met you, have come up with the same system 10 years later, same system, just never met you, and I patent it. What happens? You're thinking it can't affect you because you came up with the idea first, but you're thinking wrong. The patent system discourages trade secrets. You will be an infringer of your own idea because you failed to make it public and somebody else did. So if you think the trade secrets will protect you and give you safe harbor, they do not. Trade secrets have their place, but unless you are really diligent about keeping secret secret, you have no employees, nobody has the internet, you know, things that don't happen, trade secrets tend not to stay secret, and then you become subject to potentially somebody else patenting an idea on their own without help from you, which makes you the infringer of your own idea. So it's a dangerous game.
So does that mean in that scenario they can stop you from doing what you've been doing for 10 years?
Yes. Isn't that amazing?
Doesn't seem fair to me.
Part of the WOW show, it's the patent system is designed to encourage people to make public disclosures so that we can all learn from prior inventions. If you choose to keep it a secret, you do it at your peril. Trade secrets are great, but they have their downside.
Okay, so let's back up again. What are the rules for getting a patent and what can and cannot be patented?
All right. You got to have an invention. And typically a machine, a formula, a method of doing something, typically transformative. It has to be new. It hasn't been done before. You can't patent what's been done. I had somebody come to my office once and say, I bought this at Macy's. I want to patent it. Well, you didn't think of it. It's not yours, and it's been out. You can't patent it. So it has to be new. And then it has to pass another rather tricky test, which is unobvious. That's the hard test in patent, been the hard problem forever. It may be new. It's not the same as something done before, but it's a little variation thereon. Is that variation sufficient to be grantable as a patent? And that's where we fight all the time over. I can't go into detail, but assume that it has to be new and unobvious, and you have to file it within 1 year of certain public disclosures. And obviously the biggest problem is people come with ideas, they use them for over a year, and they say, wow, this is working out really well. Now I need a patent. It's gone forever.
Michael, quite often we see the term patent pending. Who do you file a patent with, and how long typically does it take to get one?
All patents have to be filed with the U.S. Patent Office, and you can't mark anything patent pending unless you indeed have filed for patent protection. Patents come in a lot of different forms. There's such a thing as a provisional patent, which is an extremely dangerous document. So if you've heard of it, make sure you're talking to a professional in this area. The patent system is designed to take rights away from you. The patent office's job is to try and keep as much of the idea in the public domain, and your job is to try and keep as much of it in your hands. And it's a struggle. So you have to be really good at this. Anyway, so you have to file within time limits. You have to have an invention in the area that's patentable. We talked a little bit about that. And it has to be unobvious. Then it goes into the patent office, and they're a bit backlogged, so it'll sit in queue for 18 months to 2 years. Meanwhile, though, your patent pending, so your rights are secure, and then it will go through an examination process where the patent examiner will search to see what was done before and present arguments as to why you should or should not get a patent based on, typically, whether he or she thinks it's obvious in view of what was done before. If you can overcome that, you get a patent.
So there have to be millions of patents out there.
Well, there are at least 7.5 million in the U.S., and then you have patents in every other country. So there's a lot out there. There was a patent, a commissioner of the patent office in the 1880s made an amazing statement. Remember, 1880s, he said, "I don't know that we need the patent office anymore. I think everything has been invented." So it's fair to say that there's always something new.
I don't think I'd want to work in the patent office and find out if your new application today is unique and unobvious. How can you possibly do that with 7.5 million patents out there already
issued? Well, there is a very powerful search tool available only in the patent office. Oddly enough, you can't get it online. You actually have to go to Washington to use it, and they have access to it. And they're pretty good at this. There's over 1,500 examiners, and they're divided according to technology, so they know their field pretty well. So it's not as daunting as you might think.
And on average, how long does it take to get one issued?
Probably from start to finish, about 3 years. However, if you need one in a hurry because you know you have infringement problems, there is an accelerated process which can do it in under 12 months.
No doubt that costs more money.
It's not really a cost issue. There are some legal questions about whether it's a good choice or not, but in many cases, it's a very good choice.
Okay, Michael, are there any alternatives to patents? This sounds like a very involved and lengthy process.
Well, let's put it this way. If you have an idea that is patentable and you choose not to patent it, you are waiving the only game in town. There is no alternative. We talked about trade secrets. Trade secrets are not protectable as such. That is, if you have a secret and I come up with the same secret, never mind that issue I brought up about me patenting it, but if I have figured out your secret by legitimate means, I didn't steal it, I can use it, and there's nothing you can do about it. So trade secrets are not really protective other than they are secrets. Secrets are hard to keep. So the only real game in town is patents. So if you want to have a right and you want to keep others from using that concept, that's what you got to do. Now, remember, there's a point to this beyond just having that right. It's a transferable right. It's a really valuable right. And that companies that are bought and sold are often valued heavily on their technology. If I have a great idea. Let's take a medical device, and this brings up an important topic. Let's say I create this the next great heart valve, and I've gone through all my FDA, and the thing works well, and it's marketing well, and I want to sell it to a Medtronic. Medtronic will look at my patents and say, well, it's a pretty good invention. You got great technology. What if they find out that your patent is poorly done? And it's easily circumvented because there is another side to patents. The first side is you got to get them, and the second side is you got to get them strong. There's such a thing as a weak patent, one that's easily circumvented.
So there are good patents and bad patents.
If you want to call it that, yeah, that would be a fair characterization. The reality is that invention, the concept, is maybe 50% of the value of the patent. The other 50% is how well was it drafted, and how well was it, we call it prosecuted, examined by the patent office. And a great part of the value of the patent depends on how carefully this is done. We've actually done a study which was shocking. 60 to 80% of the patents we've looked at have serious flaws. They're flaws that if a Medtronic were to look at your medical device patent and say, it's a beautiful idea, your invention is great, but I see easy workarounds to your patents. Why should I pay you for this when J&J can have it for free? And this is the dilemma. If you get a patent, but it's full of holes, it's porous, it doesn't sell. And there is a real problem in the industry.
You know, I met with a client just recently who had a proprietary product that was very unique and it was patented, mm-hmm. but it took him like 20 years to get this thing up and moving. And in the meantime, he made alterations and improvements and so forth. And when we were done talking about his hard assets and his balance sheet assets, we started talking about the intellectual property, copyrights, trademarks, patents. And fortunately, he came back and he said the original patent has expired, but we have 5 new patents because we refined the product in the process over all of those years, and we went back and filed. And so now he has that, and he has what I would call a barrier to entry for another company unless they buy the rights to that patent when they buy his company when we go to sell it. So this is what you're talking about. When it's time to sell, what is it? Is it protected? Is it something that has real value that a buyer will pay for?
Sure. Let's talk for a second about that circumstance where the original patent is expired. I mean, they do expire after time. You're given a limited life on this monopoly, and then anybody can use it. And you filed on improvements. So one could say, well, you have no protection on the expired patent, so why don't your competitors just make the earlier version? The reason is the earlier version is no longer state of the art. So these incremental patents that they have can be extremely valuable even if the underlying patent is now expired. Furthermore, in patents, quantity plays a big role. Having a single patent is one thing, but having 5 patents makes simple analysis of patent infringement geometrically more difficult. And that's a giant barrier to entry for your competitors. They might say, I don't think any of your patents are any good, and I don't think we are covered by any of them, but it's going to cost me $75,000 or $150,000 to find out the answer to that. That's a big barrier. So having a family of patents, having a group of patents, even if they're only incremental, can be an enormous lever in your industry.
And in this particular case, he'd put in all that time and effort and money, and in the recent couple of years, he was starting to make an impact. He had some significant sales, some significant profits, and because he went back and filed those incremental patents, as you call them, he did have the protection necessary so that we could go out and demonstrate value.
Right, and look at it from the competitor's point of view. I want to go into your market. I see you have a portfolio of patents. It's going to cost me a fair amount of money to figure out whether I'm covered or not, or whether I can work around it. And if I am wrong, the damages for patent infringement are typically their lost profits, but they can be triple. There is an opportunity to gain triple damages, 3 times the lost profits, and the attorney's fees of both sides. So if you're the new entrant into the market, you've got all this upfront risk. You've got to analyze the patents. You might not be able to do them, and you've thrown that money down the drain. And then you look at a potential 3 times damages plus attorney's fees, and you say, do I want to take the risk?
That'll make you think long and hard before you get into that mess.
And that's why the system works, is that you can have enormous power with patents. And those people say, they're not for me, I'm going to do trade secrets, I don't care. When they come to sell their company and they actually had created great ideas over the years, what do they got to show for it? What is transferable here? They've shown that they had creative ideas, but their modus operandi was give it away.
So, Michael, what are the takeaways for our listeners when they're considering patents for their business?
Well, I think first and foremost, you have to decide that you're going to play by the rules. Either you're in the game or you're going to be subject to those people who are in the game. So if you're developing technology, you're developing ideas that are patentable, other people are doing the same, and they will probably get you into a patent infringement problem sooner or later. So you're either in the game or you're going to be kicked around by it. If you get into this thing, that is, you're going to do patents, you need to be very mindful of time limits, and you need to be very careful that you get the best quality work you can get, because as I said, 50% of it's the invention, but 50% of it is the patent attorney getting you the patent. A great invention with a mediocre patent process gives you a mediocre outcome, and there's a real difference.
So for all our business owners out there, if they think they've got a process or a product or something that's proprietary and they want to protect it, they should at least go find a copyright, trademark, and patents attorney and take him out to lunch and have a conversation, shouldn't they?
Well, the lunch is really important.
Fatten you up a little bit, Michael. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
If you want to know more about this subject, I've got a PowerPoint. Just send me an email. I'll send it to you. It fills in some of the gaps of what we could talk about today.
Great. Thanks for joining us today, Michael. We hope that our listeners have learned how using trademarks, branding, copyrights, and patents can help you to not only protect your business, but to help build transferable enterprise value as part of your overall exit strategy. Thanks for joining us today. You have been listening to a podcast with Michael Lasky on todaysbusinessradio.com. Please tune us in on News Radio 830 WCCO every Saturday morning to hear more about how to maximize the value of your business, or go to todaysbusinessradio.com and click on Topics or Contributors to listen to other valuable topics of interest to business owners. All content provided by Today's Business Radio is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice from your legal, accounting, and business advisors. Today's Business Radio is not liable for the contents of this podcast, nor does it endorse any commercial product or service mentioned or advised in this podcast. All radio shows, podcasts, and other content provided by Today's Business Radio is copyrighted and may not be reproduced or downloaded for any reason without prior written consent of Today's Business Radio. Thanks for listening to todaysbusinessradio.com.